By Night Studios presents April 24th and 25th, 2020, the Mind's Eye Theater event of the season, Blood and Betrayal, Redemption. Join us at the Abbey in downtown Orlando for an evening of intrigue, politics, and personal horror in an immersive live-action experience. Forge a new chapter in the World of Darkness Chronicle as you reveal the hidden secrets and twisted machinations of the Ivory Tower. Blood and Betrayal, Redemption, a premium Vampire the Masquerade LARP event. Go to ByNightStudios.com for tickets. Fans of our podcast, use promo code MET25 for 10% off ticket prices. That's MET25 for 10% off. Blood and Betrayal, Redemption, ByNightStudios.com. If you'd like to sponsor an episode of our podcast, or you have something exciting you want to promote, please send inquiries to Nathan at UtilityMuffinLabs.com. We have several packages and options to work with any budget. We specialize in working with community content creators, and we will write and produce unique, individualized material for your events, books, or your products. Again, email Nathan at UtilityMuffinLabs.com for details.
This is 25 Years of Vampire the Masquerade, a retrospective podcast brought to you by UtilityMuffinLabs.com.
Welcome to another episode of 25 Years of Vampire the Masquerade. And today we are joined by Thomas from Flyos Games. And he is here to talk to us about the upcoming release of Vampire the Masquerade Chapters. Welcome, Thomas. How are you?
I'm very good. I'm very pleased to be here. And hi, everyone.
You know, we talked a lot last time you were on about the game. And I think Bob and I were concerned. We were like, what's left to know? And apparently you've got a bunch of stuff you want to share.
Yeah, I do. And we used that opportunity to actually, get some feedback from your community, to ask questions here and there, what could happen, what the people want to know. And last time we had this fantastic podcast, we've had so much thing going on, so much ideas, so much feedback, so much, you know, stunt as well, and surprises. So I'm very eager to talk with all of you about this. So yeah, let's start.
Cool. So I'm sure, like, you know, Bob and I both, our big thing is like, what, I guess let's start at the beginning. First of all, let me ask you, when is this game coming out? Or when is it going to be made public, I guess, for the Kickstarter?
So I believe that when you guys are going to hear that podcast, you're going to be pretty much close or already in the campaign. And it's going to start February 4th, and it's going to be open until February 28th. The first day is going to have some kind of a day one promotion. Basically, the Banu Hakim expansion is going to be included if you back the regular game. And we also have some, of course, Kickstarter exclusive. And that's one of the main thing that we are very excited to reveal. So we've made three miniature Kickstarter exclusive. So the first one is the one that we've already talked about on our social media, which is... 80 millimeter werewolf miniature. So basically, in one of your scenarios, you're gonna have to go inside Montreal sewers. And if you're familiar with Montreal by Night, there is already that kind of, you know, old and corrupted and tainted by the Wyrm werewolf. And yeah, he stayed around, and you're gonna have to find a way to get something close to him or to onto him. But basically, depending on your action, what you're going to do, it's going to be tough. And one of those Kickstarter exclusive is actually, this miniature that is double the size compared to other 40mm miniature. So that's the first one. The second is the main protagonist of the game, which is Sabbat Kainite. So is very, very disturbed, and you will see this miniature that is kind of very scary and majestic. Is is a kindred, is a canine that reveal in his nature and does not hide what he really think he is. So that's kind of amazing. And the last one, that's the one that we're very proud of. We are officially in partnership with Hartsoup Labs and Bloodlines 2. So the players of Vampire the Masquerade chapter is going to have the chance to play and to actually play as a playable character for a few scenarios. Mr. Demp of Bloodlines 2 inside Vampire the Masquerade chapters. So miniatures, of course, illustration, character sheet. The goal is to after a few scenarios, you're going to play your Bruja, your Ventru, your 8 or 11 playable characters, and you're going to have the chance to feel what a powerful kindred can do. So, yes, we have the whole miniature revealed and ready, and it has been designed and by Mark Simonetti, of course. And also by.
So, is there any hint as to who this this Sabbat character that's included is? Is this a character that has showed up in a previous book, perhaps? Or
no, it's something that we came upon and we actually created, based, of course, on the last development of Montreal by Night and the V3 and the V20. We had the opportunity, and it's still an option, of course, because we have all the story done, but we can add a famous character here and there, but we try as much as possible to only use the character that we are creating to renew everything from beginning and not use character that are already very, very known and has kind of a story with the lore. So we are mostly using only kindred and character that we've created.
Brilliant. I think that's more than a sell point. I think if you did it another way, it kind of would be like, would be Vampire Chapters, right? It's you guys' creativity, your story, your product in conjunction with what's going on. But I should guess, is just state this, and I hope others agree, that it's about new. It's about new life into what we're enjoying, and so I look forward to seeing that.
Well, I have a surprise for you, Bob, about this, because as you guys know, I'm a very big fan of your show, and I'm always using it to do some cardio and some gym. And every single time I'm using actually your podcast to, refresh everything I've read for so many years, so many times, so many times, so many by nights, so many lore sheets and forums. And sometimes going back to the basics is, you go back to something that you've read and you maybe not 100% understood back in the day because you were learning to walk step by step in that universe on the world of darkness. And sometimes you go back to the beginnings and you realize there is kind of an epiphany. So thanks to your episode of The Fitting, we've actually twisted one of the mechanisms that were implemented already in chapters. And it is now way more greedier, way more dangerous, and way more principal in the way we are actually fitting their characters. So as you already know, you are already in the credits of the game. And that's the kind of vibe and a thing that we are very passionate about. Sometimes in forums, we have some kind of question from the community. And yeah, you know what? That's a very fair question. Let's talk about it. And sometimes there's some people saying, hey, what about Standee stretch goal? Because sometimes I don't want to put all my miniatures and maybe I'm already, painting them. So I cannot use them as easy as possible. So you know what? Standee's stretch goal? Yeah, that's a good idea. Let's do this. And like this, in one forum, boom, one of the stretch goal was found from the CWOD forum in French language. And sometimes, boom, you hear some very good podcast and some good ideas come through. And that's exactly why we've had the community from more than a year ago, close to go get into the chapters group and give us ideas and feedback on how we could improve things, because that's the game we're going to be very frustrated about, because we have to create it, so we're not going to be able to discover it as a right players. But if we're about to do this, let's just make sure that's the best game possible we can make.
That's awesome.
It's an honor, in fact. That's
right. Absolutely.
I couldn't think of the words. I was like, I don't know what word communicates. My face was going to split in a smile as she was saying it. So I was like, that's so cool.
It is. It's you're playing a vampire. So if you're not sucking blood from a human, well, it's a mage game, if I'm retaking your words from the previous scenarios, previous podcast. So yeah,
I agree.
You need to make that that, you know, very specific statement about what the characters are and what they do. And yeah, that's very important. So that's a shock, but very awesome. So what else has kind of changed and altered, and what else can we look forward to with this Kickstart that's already out?
Yeah. Last time we talked, we were still thinking about expansions, and we decided that it was not to the benefit of the story, basically, because we didn't want to make something that could, be altered by the number of stretch goal. Our story has been validated and implemented in the lore of the whole World of Darkness. So when you talk with other licenses of White Wolf, they have to take in consideration, for example, that Montreal is not a Sabbat city anymore. It's right. It's a Camarilla one. And they're still struggling with Narcs because they're not strong enough to hold everything. And because there's the Sabbat, because there is the Second Inquisition, they'd rather work in together, even if they are in Cold War, just to make sure that they don't get all caught in together. So we've decided to not do kind of an expansion based on the story, but based on the quality of components and also in terms of characters. So since the last time we've worked, we've made some contests in the group, and we've made one character with one of the communities. So we worked with actually Alyssa Malkavian, which is one of the community manager of the Brazil community. Mm-hmm. And we've designed together the minister character. So now there is the minister character and also the La Sombra with the Banu Akin. Mm-hmm. There's three additional expansion. And we are also doing a lot of stretch goal based on the collaborators that we're working with. It's now official. We're working with Succubus Publishing, which actually made Midara, the story campaign board game, more based on D&D, but they're very good at what they do. We hit it off with a genuine and a happy friendship, and we've wanted to make something out of this. So they're going to be writing in chapters one side quest that we have designed, and we're very excited to work with them. Matthew Dawkins is also taking more and more place in the project. His insight and the way he designed and handled the project of Chicago by Night was amazing, and we feel very confident working with him. So in terms of content, that's where that's the kind of new news that we have.
So as far as the content is concerned, this is kind of like a general question that a lot of people presented. What is the expectation going to be for like replayability? For instance, when you sit down to, run a tabletop game with dice and pencil and paper, the replayability is the extent is your imagination, right? So for a game like this, what is like the overall amount of times you can replay this game?
You can double down the campaign. So for example, inside Vampire the Masquerade Chapters is a campaign game. We have, it holds many immersive scenario, more than 40 right now. So we're still fine tuning the number depending on the funding we're going to have with a Kickstarter, but it's 40 scenario minimum. When you play one scenario, you're going to play 30 minutes per player per scenario. So if you play two or three, that's going to be a minimum of 20 to 40 hours of gameplay. There is also multiple mechanisms. When you play VTM chapters, you play specific characters. They're not only clan members of, you know, Vanshu, Bruja, or Gangrel. They have specific flaws, specific disciplines, specific history, and skills. So you're starting with a preset character and character sheet, but you can go through the whole first gameplay of the campaign. Yes, you're going to know the hook of the story and what's happening, but you can start with a completely different character, a completely different clan, and play a completely different way and approach. If you, the first one was more on the dialogue or more on the combat, you can now play maybe in more in the investigation approach. Or maybe you can mix things up and discover the story from another angle with other players as well. The base game contained 8 miniatures, and you can play the whole campaign with 4 players. So you could be playing with you and 3 other friends with characters in one specific way, and, you know, choose one thing compared to another in specific scenarios, unlocking different paths of the campaign and the scenario, and finish it off, start over again, and just play it from a complete different angle. And you will learn a lot of things. You will play scenarios that you've never played before.
So in short, what we're hearing is that this has this mentality of like a video game, similar to that, in that, you know, just because you played the fighter and went through it all doesn't mean you got the story. You were worried about the action moment to moment and that split decision. However, when you go through playing the investigator, you now are getting the whys behind stuff occurred, and maybe your actions weren't the way to go about it the other way because you didn't know the full story.
Exactly. We are big players of Dark Souls and Bloodlines. kind of the feeling is kind of, Detroit Become Human, where you can finish the whole campaign with one ending or others. So depending on what you're going to play and how you're going to play it, maybe this werewolf in the sewers, you're going to be able to approach it from one way or another. Maybe you will learn more things, weaknesses. Maybe you will find with the discussion aspect in the dialogue, some information based on with the Nosferatu. Maybe you're going to find something else with the Gangrel that had fight with him. So it's the approach that, for example, in Bloodlines, when you play a Toreador, you're going to have one specific gameplay. But if you play Malkavian or the Nosferatu, you're going to have a completely different experience. And that's right. Pretty much where what our aspiration was.
One thing that you did mention that someone had asked, and we'll get into like specific questions later, but you had mentioned that you can play 1 to 4 players. Is that going to be like a hard limit? Is there going to be any ability to increase the number of players, you know, like to 5? Or is that going to be like basically 4 is the hard limit?
So 4 is the hard limit for now. We've made that statement in our previous game, Until the Light, where it was a 3 to 6 players. And we took the time to, make sure that the game was balanced enough and strong enough to actually be a good 3 to 6 player experience. And we didn't want to rush and say, yes, you can play 2 players, because most of the feedback was, oh, it's too bad you can play 2 players on this. When we went to Gen Con, we actually prepared a 2-player pamphlet where you can actually improve the game and play in a very specific way and play it with 2 players. So it's not something impossible. 4 is a very stable way of, you know, scaling the difficulty and the toughness of specific encounters. But if you want to play at 5 people, well, we didn't had that much feedback related to this. But if we feel and we hear and we can see and we do a survey with the community and that, yes, we need to play at 5 players and it's a significant, feedback, well, of course, it's going to really affect our decision based on this. And maybe we're going to scale up the difficulty for 5 players and just do it.
how will the specific mechanics of being a vampire, like blood pool or loss or gain of humanity, how will that be handled within the game? Can you give us some idea about how that will kind of translate?
Of course. That's, as you know, we had the discussion already at Gen Con together that we are big VGM players. And for us, that's exactly where you can interpret the depth of your character, whose things actually do matter. That's exactly what we love about V3 to V5. That's the push your luck mechanisms of the blood dice, of the hunger. So the hunger inside the game is exactly like V5. The more you use your blood, so to mend wounds, to do some blood surges, or if you use your disciplines, every single time you do it, you need to do a Ross check. So the more you know, hunger you have, the less black dice you have and the more red you have. And when you use the willpower and you burn one, you can reroll up to 3 dice. So, but black dice. And if you have a lot of anger, you're going to have more randomness inside your throw. You're going to have less control over the beast. And if you maximize your whole anger cap up and you fail a last Ross check, you're going to frenzy. And if you frenzy, that's basically, except if you're really lucky, it's pretty much the end of the scenario. Or if you drink some, you know, kind or animal on the tile, well, you could have a quick break. But if someone saw you and you cannot, you know, dominate his memory, or you cannot, well, make sure he doesn't talk, that could also have some effect on your humanity and the masquerade level of the whole campaign. So yes, we've included every single important thing of a VTM play, which is the hunger, the willpower, the mastered level, and the humanity.
I'm actually very intrigued about the masquerade. How does that really factor into your gameplay?
That's one of the hardest mechanisms actually inside chapters, because what happened with Montiel was, someone somewhere find a way to break, you know, Shreknet. And at some point, the Inquisition was able, and First Light was able to target very easy targetable kindred and kainat. And the blank bodies were very, very easy to target in Mexico and Montreal. So they were the first one to be cut off. Because when you are kindred and you respect the masquerade, passively you have less chance to be targeted by a Second Inquisition.
Right.
So Montreal has been targeted, and they all died in one single night in the middle of the Cathedral of Eternal Whispers, and that's what we call the Night of Ashes. The Night of Ashes is currently being adapted to a LARP one shot that may be taking place with Jackalope Entertainment. So that is something that we're very excited to, you know, not only being present and alter the lore of the World of Darkness with chapters, but also have other licenses work with us and integrate those with LARP fans, with and local communities. So when the masquerade level has been, you know, when the Montreal has been cleared of pretty much every single Sabbat presence in Montreal, they took the city for granted for a lot of time. And after a few years, well, there is not enough activity, so we're going to leave. So the Second Inquisition just left a little bit of forces in Montreal. And so far, everything is good. So far, there is no slip. So far, there is no major masquerade breach. But what happened if, for example, you let someone saw you feeding on another human, just, you know, fly by and just run to the police? Maybe they will hear something about this. Maybe they will put more resources into the city to make sure that maybe the blank bodies are back. We need to investigate. And so if the masquerade level... you have multiple masquerade breach, it's going to scale up the difficulty and had some Inquisition presence in your scenes and your tiles and your scenario. So it's going to deeply affect the difficulty of the whole overall campaign.
I like that. I like that a lot.
Because you cannot, you know, you cannot do anything you want and just take a throat and take a blood can and just no repercussion. That will affect everything.
Wow. That's very cool. I just want to like go back a second what else do you know about this LARP? People might get to play out this scenario in an event.
Yeah, exactly. That's what we're aiming to do with Jackalope. We still need to see how much the funding of on Kickstarter is going to go, but this is right. Something that we're very excited about. This is not something that we discovered a long time ago. I've played my first lap 2 months ago, actually. And
wow. We played
with Kane, so Midnight in Canada, a group of LARP here in Montreal. And we are also partner having a collaboration with them because they're amazing. And I've discovered a whole kind of a thing that they didn't know. And, you know, I jumped on it because it was amazing. So this is something that we want to do from the beginning with chapters. We want to be a bridge between the board game and the RPG communities, but there is other communities as well. And there is a LARP one. There's the video game one. And we want VTM to grow and we want VTM to live to its full extent and possibility. So this is something that we've been working on to actually include in the stretch goal some kind of how to play a LARP thing, and especially in Montreal LARP scene, to make sure that our characters could be played if you wanted to play LARP one-shot session in Montreal. There is also the Night of Ashes that we need to make sure that it is genuine and makes sense, but the goal is to play one night where as a arrogant and very powerful Kainite in Montreal, the city that you have, you know, mastered and controlled for over 200 or 300 years, where in one night you lose everything by humans. So we are seeing this as kind of a, you know, very noir and dark scenarios where everyone dies. And that could be a very good introduction to LARP thing where you do not need to take care of your character and everything. You have a very specific purpose, mission during that LARP, and you're going to die. You know it.
Right. Here's my question, because honestly, all the stuff you're talking about, the Night of Ashes and the scenario where, you know, First Light comes in and destroys all these Kainites, that's really super intriguing to me. And I know everybody's going to want to know, are these concepts, these plot lines going to be included in a standard, Vampire the Masquerade release someday? Or are we going to have exclusive access to them through the board game? Do you know anything about that? Is there any talks about that?
There is nothing definite and signed and, written in stone yet.
Right.
But what we're aiming to do is to include all this material unlocked based on the stretch goal and the funding of the campaign. So, for example, if we raised enough money, we're going to be able to put some budget back into the Night of Ashes LARP event. Because how it works inside Kickstarter and the board game industry, right now we're asking for $150,000 Canadian dollars. To actually be able to pay all the resources and the writers. We have 8 writers, 3 illustrators, some graphic design. So we have kind of a team of 15 people working full-time for maybe 6 or 7 months on VTM chapter. So first we need to pay them. Then we need to be able to produce the game. And the game, if, for example, we have 1,000 backers or 2,000 backers, well, there's a definite price cost per unit. But if we have 3,000, 4,000, 5,000, 10,000, these costs per unit go down.
Right.
And on this is where we can save and have more budget than we expected based on the basic level of funding compared to one that have doubled or tripled because the cost per unit actually decreased. So we can use that money to things that we want to focus on. So, of course, the level and the quality of the game from even if we just get to the basic of the funding, we're going to be able to do an amazing job. We can add even more when we're having more funding. So that's the kind of thing that we want to focus on. We're also working, for example, with the Eternal Struggle. We're also working with Heritage.
Hold on. You're working with the Eternal Struggle. Yes. Is this the
yeah. Let's hold up, back up. You can't, all right, tell us more.
We're talking the card game, correct?
Yes.
What are we making? Like you gotta have something. Like a chapter deck. What could it be? Is it a Montreal specific deck? I mean, you must know.
I do. We've been talking with TES about this. It's going to depend on the number of backers we have, but yes, we're trying to do some teasing and some exclusive TES cards for the people that back Vampire the Masquerade chapters. Yes.
So I got to tell you what this sounds like to me, guys. It sounds like chapters is absolutely what you want to back to have influence in what's going on. I mean, it's connected to the video game coming out. It's connected to the freaking card game. That's going on. They're listening to you and what you have to put in for content. They're doing like I'm listening more than I'm asking because it's just digestion. It's literally telling me where my money needs to go. That's what I'm hearing.
So that's the beginning, Bob. Are you ready for?
Oh, I'm ready. I'm ready.
So let me just grab something very close to my wall.
Absolutely.
We are also working, of course, with Matthew Dawkins. So we also have some cross promotion with Chicago by Night and Blood Gods. And maybe it's going to approach very soon, but I don't know if I should be talking about this. But we should have a reference to what's happening in Montreal in LA by Night season 4.
Ooh.
As well.
Ooh, that's awesome.
We've been talking with Coterie of New York and also other licensed material that's going to come up in 2021 and 2022. And we are also making some contact with Modifuse. So yes, exactly as you actually discovered, Bob, and realized, we are implicating and trying to gather all the different licenses into VTM chapters. So the people that actually back it going to have a sneak peek, exclusive material, and you know, more information and connection with every kind of other World of Darkness licenses and universes.
Love it.
We want cohesive. We want it to be one big deal experience. And as you know, Vampire the Masquerade chapters, the first chapter is Montreal, but if everything goes according to a plan, we will not stop here. There is the number 2 maybe later on, and maybe the number 3. And we can go city by city, campaign by campaign. And this is exactly what we're trying to do here.
That's awesome. As you know, one of the greatest appeals of Vampire the Masquerade, of the World of Darkness, is its world and, you know, the impact of one place to another. And to see it kind of being implemented now in a more modern scenario, I think is really, it's awesome, but it's keeping in line with what the world always was. And I think that's the best part.
I agree. What is amazing is the support that we're having from the community. Some people are sending GIF about like, shut up and take my money. We've just launched, you know, the second video trailer on our Flyos Games Facebook page, and it went a little bit viral. We had 100,000 views for a very small niche community like this. It's kind of crazy. We had more than 450 shares on Facebook, so it's very, very impressive and encouraging to see how much the community care about we do and what we're trying to do. So we've also decided to make something for the people that, you know, want to have more but don't want to spend more. So we've made a first thing that no other Kickstarter campaign and company have made. We've made an in-house referral friend program. So in the Kickstarter page, you're going to be able to click on this referral friend program where you're going to be able to put your email and up to five other email of your friend. It's going to create an email to your friend saying, hey, I back this game. You should have a look. Maybe you will click on this. And if your friend back it, you and him is going to receive $5. And you will be able to use that money to actually lower the price of the shipping, but maybe had more add-ons, because I didn't talk about the add-ons, guys, but we've prepared a lot of things as well.
You know,
do you want to get into those?
I just want to let you know, Nate, you're at least getting $5, right? Me too. Right. That's what's going to happen.
You're probably going to get $5.
Yeah, right.
Too.
Good deal.
My goal is very simple. I've been playing Vampire the Masquerade in some form or fashion since like 1997-ish. My goal is to eventually sit down at a kitchen table and trick my parents into playing without them really realizing what's happening. That's my goal. And I can see it on the horizon.
It is a strong goal, my friend.
We are doing our best to do it. What we want for our VTM chapters is easy to play, hard to master. There is some lore here and there that we are putting that is very, very deep, very, very well connected. But we don't want to push it in front of your face and say, hey, this is related to this. Did you realize how awesome it? No, it's going to be there. It's available. Maybe you're not going to catch it first. Maybe you're going to catch it after two or three plays. That's not a problem. It's going to be ready when you are. But the first approach needs to be as user-friendly as possible. That's why, for example, that the setup of the whole board game when you're launching a scenario, we need to make it under 10 minutes. We need to, when you're ready to play alone or with friends, you can, you know, just drop the scenario tile, go out and put your miniature on the scene, read the introduction, and just play.
Right.
Because it's always a struggle to bring other friend, family into a board gaming table. If you're spending 30 minutes or an hour to set it up, you don't want to do it. You're not going to do it. It's too much effort.
Yeah. And at that point, you might as well just run a full-on tabletop role-playing game.
Exactly.
You know, if to spend an hour to set up. I love to hear that, because what I think that this kind of subculture Vampire the Masquerade fan base needs is a way to get people in easily, because it is such an awesome world. It is, you know, very interesting and entertaining. But I think the hardest part is, you know, getting people to actually sit down and play the game.
I agree. It has to be simple. It has to be user-friendly. It has to be awesome to start, to play, and to finish. And if you want to play more, that's fine. You can, you know, after the first scenario, you can play the second one. And after the second one, you can go to a third. But it has to be fun. It has to be quick. It has to be immersive. And that's what we're aiming at. That's why we've made three different mechanisms where one could be enough. We could just go with, if we only wanted to, you know, satisfy the VTM community, we could just go for a dialogue mechanism, something very simple, kind of a Detroit Become Human, where you pick one or two solutions, it goes to one place and another. And then at the end of the scenario, it gives you some consequences and choices that's going to apply to the next scenario. But we've also wanted to have something close to the combat, because we, Gary and I, have been playing kind of a very physical Kindred. And that's the way we play. That's the way we love. That's the story. But we want to have kind of a, you know, adventure.
Right.
And it's okay to play that kind of game. It's okay to also play basically only on touchstones and the horror and the political aspect. It's okay to play kind of a investigation as a Malkavian or Nosferatu. But we wanted to satisfy everyone. So you can play the gameplay you want, and you can play the kindred you want, and you can play as you like it, basically.
Well, you mentioned some add-ons that you hadn't told us about. Do you want to share some of those?
Yeah, of course. We every single add-on that we're trying to create are relevant to, of course, chapters, but could be used somewhere else as well. We've worked on a D10 set that we love, that we're going to, you know, improve over time because it's going to depend on our funding. But we're also going to create some metal set that's going to be, of course, a little bit more expensive because they're metal, but they're going to be tremendously less expensive than what is available at the moment on the market. You can also pay to have your miniatures painted. I'd be, for example, the perfect example of this. I'm a brute. I'm a bruja. Do not ask me to take a pencil and put paint on things. It's forget about this. But I'd be down, for example, to, you know, give my unpainted miniature to people that like it, that only paint miniature. And I'd be the one to pay a little bit extra to have another set of painted miniatures. So when you pay the painted miniature add-on, you're not only having your miniature painted, but you're doubling your miniature because you're receiving an extra set of miniatures that are
painted. Let's take a minute and talk about this episode's sponsor, shall we?
Sure, sounds good. This episode's sponsor is By Night Studios' premium live-action role-playing event, Blood and Betrayal Redemption.
Blood and Betrayal Redemption brings you, the player, into the heart of the Camarilla's intrigues, politics, and personal horror. Blood and Betrayal is a semi-annual LARP event produced by Night Studios and is the official By Night Studios Vampire the Masquerade Chronicle.
That means the things you do as a player will affect the future of the Chronicle and the world of darkness as a whole. This event is designed for both long-term veterans to live action and new participants to LARP. You don't need to know anything about previous Blood and Betrayal events to go and get involved.
I want to mention a few of the major design elements that have gone into the development of this event. First, player agency is a major component of the story. How many times have you gone to a LARP or game and it's clear at the end of the night it didn't matter what choices you made? Well, the storytelling staff has paid special attention to this dilemma. They are setting events in motion, but your choices will determine the outcome of the night.
Cooperative storytelling is a major part of that, too. A major focus for the BNS storytellers is the collaborative efforts to make an interesting, dramatic, and personally satisfying experience for everyone.
And that goes a long way towards building that immersion piece, which is so important to LARP.
But they don't sacrifice potential safety to provide it. BNS use several techniques to ensure games stay safe and fun for everyone.
Blood and Betrayal Redemption will be at the Abbey in Orlando, Florida on April 24th and 25th, 2020. There are a bunch of packages available that give you added bonuses and goodies. You can check those out at bynightstudios.com. When you purchase your tickets, be sure to use our promo code MET25 to get 10% off. It'll really help our show if you use the code, so it's an easy way to support us while enjoying the premier Vampire the Masquerade event of the season.
Once again, use promo code MET25 when you purchase your tickets for 10% off to support the show.
Thank you to By Night Studios for sponsoring the episode, and now back to the show.
We also have dice satchel for every clan. You can buy them, you know, one by one. Imagine you really want the Ventru. You can just buy the Ventru one and that's it. But there is 11 clan available. So it's here for you to pick. And if you want a basic one, you can just take, you know, the Caitiff one, which is basically the Ankh, and that's pretty much it. Of course, there is the three expansion pack character add-on where you can play the La Sombra, the Banu Hakim, and the Ministry. You can buy them one by one. And if you back day one, you're going to have the Banu Hakim for free.
This is wisdom.
And yeah, sorry.
No, I'm sorry. I was commenting. I said it's wisdom. I was thinking that La Sombra. Who's not going to get that?
It is one of my favorite, actually, illustration. It's so badass. We're going to talk about the flow right after because we've had so much fun creating them. But basically, the flaw of the La Sombra character, which is kind of a mix between, you know, Clan Bane and Penalty when you create characters. But basically, the La Sombra is going to have a higher chance to do some masquerade breach.
Because it's kind of built into them anyways.
Yes, exactly. And the last add-on, we're also working on an extra pack of miniature to play NPCs. So for example, you want only to play all your NPCs and, you know, bouncers, guards, harpies, and all that kind of stuff in, with miniatures. We're preparing some a big NPC kit where you can replace all your standees with miniatures. So that's pretty much the add-on that we've included. And all of this is included in the premium pledge that is, of course, more expensive. But when you get the premium pack, you're basically saving more than $100 compared to, you know, picking every single add-on one by one. So that's a big save.
That's awesome. Yeah, we've noticed a couple of announcements about miniatures, and I was kind of curious if there was some one influencing the other, you know, in this kind of ongoing expansion of material for V5. So that's really cool. I do have to ask you, though, one of the things that people want to know is about stuff that hasn't been announced. Like long term, we kind of mentioned like quality of material. The biggest question I've had is there any plan for the Ravnos down the road? Are there any plans for Bloodlines, things of that nature? And honestly, is it even possible for you to know yet if that's something that could happen?
So I will never say no to something that has not been confirmed or, you know, completely retconned yet. Thing is, of course, since the Ravnos has been pretty much killed by their antediluvian, it's going to be really hard to consider them more than bloodlines. They are bloodlines, so they are, as you know, as strong as Trubruja or Nagaraja or Laban or kind of the stuff. Thing is, for Chapter 1, Montreal, we wanted to go with something very, very accessible. So the main... Right. It doesn't mean that in the second opus, it's going to be something as vanilla as this. We can go even further, that's for sure. In the meantime, Sabbat has been, you know, it's still not out yet by White Wolf, and they're still, you know, working on this, and
Right. There's
nothing that we can rely on. So that's why we wanted to not focus our expansion on anything related to this, because it's still, you know, mobile, so we cannot create any foundation of a game based on this. When it's going to be open and revealed and we're going to work on this, it's always a possibility, that's for sure. It's always fun to work on new and different characters. Doesn't mean that we're going to specifically work on a Ravnos or Samdi or Ekata, but yes, we want to, of course. I have to be partial with the people listening to this. I hate Ravnos. My first game was Angrel, so it's deep in my core. I hate you guys, but it's, you know, I've as a creator of the board game, Gary and I, we have to be very impartial on what we're doing. It always has to be for the greater good of the game and the community. So sometimes we want to treat a character badly because, God, we hate him. But it has to also be realistic, cohesive, and inclusive. So it's not because I hate Ravnos because my first character was a Gangrel that I'm not going to give all the love I can to that character.
And as usual, it's usage changes mind, right? If you had to sit with it long enough, I'm sure you could find a space for them, just not right now. And that's the important thing. The thought that was coming through my head, it was kicking around, is with all these ideas and where they're going, one of the things I had heard was, are you going to stay with, is chapters going to be the answer for what the Sabbat have been doing? It's not going to stay Montreal, you'll do a Miami version or thought of Miami. And etc. Right, like you'll go down what happened to Borges from novel on through, which is the Archbishop of Sambra, on through to what it looked like in that area after the Sabbat have gone.
That's a possibility, definitely. One of the things that we discovered is how easy you can change the lore inside as a licensee if it makes sense and if the community is behind you. I mean, if, for example, we are doing the Kickstarter campaign as the way we want it, it's going to give us even more, you know, weight on what works and how we can improve things over time. And that's exactly why we've been very transparent on how we're going to treat our community, our backers, how passionate we are, because we want the best for this universe, for the World of Darkness. I cannot emphasize how VTMs changed my life when I was a teenager and even a young adult. I used to think, when I was trapped in my own life, what my character would do, what are my skills here and there, what if I was in a board game or a RPG session, what could I do to improve my situation? And that skills directly come from VTM. So I can directly relate my own personal growth as my tabletop RPG experience. And this is something we want to spread. This is something that we have the opportunity right now to improve. And we do not compromise on quality. We do not compromise on the best quality game we can create. So, of course, if there is a place for us and that makes sense, we will jump on this as much as we're jumping on the realization and the full growth potential of Vampire the Masquerade Chapters.
Let's say what's going to happen will happen, and this game will be very successful. Everyone will enjoy it, and they'll love it, and it's time to go back to the drawing board. Do you have any desire or interest in doing a similar game for other for the other like game lines, like, for like a the werewolves, the mages, the things of that nature?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. We've had some good experience with werewolf. We've had some good experience with mage. And there is so much thing we can do. This is only the beginning. When we call RPG in a box, it's a denomination where we could be using this for multiple license and multiple universe. But right now, everything that we do, everything that we are aiming and working on is Masquerade. Doesn't mean that the rest is not here, already available, already close to us. And yes, there is a lot of things we want to do with the rest of the VTM licenses. There is a lot of ideas. And, you know, just imagine what we could do if, for example, we were using that kind of thing for Cthulhu, or for D&D, or for mages, or for werewolf. It's only going to depend on how good we can make a story out of it, and how strong the support and the community is behind us. But yes, nothing is impossible.
I love it. I'm just salivating at the idea of finally getting a werewolf game where here's the difference between vampire and werewolf. In vampire, which does have combat, everybody can relate in their head what they're facing. Stanley Immortal or another vampire, or maybe something with some demonics, template stuff going on, or some shadows, whatever. That's still very much in the imagination wheelhouse of everyone. When you get to werewolf, it is a bunch of spirits, usually, banes or some nonsense, and you're fighting things that are hard to imagine. However, your board game makes them right there.
Right.
It puts them right there. Right. And suddenly, the focus isn't on worrying about placement or what's going on. You're focused on your character and this horrific thing in the corner. It's more than just a few boring stats. And I sat there and said to myself, I was like, there's no way that doesn't make everything for someone trying to run a werewolf game. You know, even if it's like that, not just the cool scenario you come up with, it transcends the box almost.
Exactly. It's the sky's the limit, especially when you focus mainly on combat. I mean, it's really hard. We didn't went for the easy road with VTM. We could have just, you know, make a dialogue system or make a combat system,
right,
or made an investigation system, and that would be it. No, we've made them all separate, balanced, and we've also had to find a way to make them intricately connected. So going from one way to another could be a nice hybrid, and you could also have the freedom of choice that is intrinsically connected with the playing an RPG. But if, for example, you go for werewolf or other kind of more, you know, simple approach of doing things, well, combat with miniatures has already been made and is already available for any kind of other game. It's one of the highest, biggest campaign available in Kickstarter for the last 5 years. So that's easy to do. And we do not want to compromise on the quality we want to make. So imagine if after Vampire the Masquerade chapters, where we already have the investigation system, we already have the combat system, we already have the dialogue system, and now we can focus more on big, bold, and disgusting miniatures with an even higher and improved combat system, that would be crazy good and amazing. So yes, that's definitely something that we're thinking about. But we want to have the dialogue. The werewolf, it's a spiritual game. If you don't get that, you're not playing werewolf. So we want to add this layer as well. Same thing for mage. Magic is very, very dependent on the tabletop, you know, imagination. When you're using one piece here and using it in to not create any kind of paradox. So that's something that we need to work on. But
I got
to
ask you, Thomas, can you please not swear in the podcast? You know, the mage words are just rough. Hard for Nate to edit that.
I don't edit. Come on.
I'm teasing. Sorry, I didn't mean to derail you, but
so I do have another kind of important question. This one comes from one of our listeners that's has a visual impairment, and he asks, you know, being a blind person, is this a secretive game? Like if I play Betrayal at the House on Haunted Hill, or Betrayal at the House on the Hill, someone can help me read. Because everything's on the table for everyone. But if it's like poker or Go Fish, people aren't able to help him. So is that something that has gone into the creation of the game at all? Or is it a game that you need to be very secretive when you play?
No, you don't. You are playing as a coterie. So when you're playing one with only one person, so only yourself as a soul, you are still controlling the coterie. So you can bring another kindred with you. You can bring another you know, ghoul or anything. So everything is here available. So when you're playing as a blind person, you can definitely have the whole scenario and the dialogue read to you. So you don't even need in that case the miniatures, the style. You can also use the combat system if you're helped, because yes, it's up to you to decide if you want to go with a very reckless move, very defensive move, or a more kind of a polyvalent combat system where you could, you know, put your successes in one way or another. So definitely people that have disabilities but are being helped by other player would be able to play that game just like, you know, regular players.
I'm sitting here, and the only thing I keep thinking of in chapters, and I have to ask this. I originally wasn't going to, but I need to. Do you bring up a topic of the Bane system that they have in V5? Is there a mechanic to represent that in the scenarios?
Yeah, yes. It was very important for us to have all the flaws make sense, and also for the disciplines. So, you know, vampires are a supernatural creature. If you do not have any kind of a feeding system that remind you that you are drinking human blood, you're a monster. If you're not using supernatural creature to tell you, hey, you're supernatural, well, you're not playing a vampire system. You're not playing a vampire game. So we need to make them feel that the blood of vampire endow them with, you know, multiple powers based on their clan. And that could give them an advantage at specific moments. So we've released already all the disciplines on our on BGG, on Facebook, and of course it's available on Kickstarter. So basically, animalisms help you communicate and manipulate animal and the beast within. Aspects give you supernatural senses and understand your environment. Well, you would be able to use that first one, animalism, into a fighting scenario, but also in investigation. situation when you could use your feral whisper to summon a swarm of rats and make a diversion somewhere else in the alley. Auspex is going to give you some help and sneak peek in your enemy shit card for the next two combat cards. So you will have power. You will also have some flaws. Every single character have a specific history, skills, discipline access. So we wanted to give them kind of a mix between the common heritage from the clan, but also a personal trait, personality trait. So clan members are usually easily, characterized, but every kindred in a clan are not identical and stereotypical. So we wanted to make them different. So, for example, the Ventru cannot drink blood from animals. Torador is going to be is going to have a dice pool withdrawn or added depending on their surroundings. So if you're in the sewers, you're not going to feel great, and you're going to have -1 or -2 die. Nosferatu have less social die with human interaction because you can feel that he has a creepy presence. The Malkavian has some anxiety. So the more hunger point you have, the more penalty you will have for your social roles. Trimir has a bane based on their blood. They have the usurper blood, so they are going to be unable to perform some blood surges. Brugia have a smaller hunger cap at 4 instead of 5 because they are enraged. Caitiff has a lack of lineage. Gangrel are feral. Banu Hakim is blood cursed. The Ministry is an enemy of the light. And the La Sombra is ruthless and start with 5 humanity. So there is always a way to make something interesting. And what is always cool with the tabletop RPGs, you can fine tune your character and min max it as you are playing it as a D&D player. But what I feel is very, very awesome with VTM is that your handicap, your flaws is what actually makes you a character. And that is what we've tried to make with the flaws of the character for VTM Challenge.
I love hearing that.
Yeah, that's, I agree with you. I think it's very important. But that does bring me to another question that we had, which I think, nowadays is a little bit more focused on than maybe in the past, but have there any steps been taken to make sure that there aren't any harmful tropes or biases in game design mechanics included in the game? Because we know the Vampire, the Masquerade, White Wolf, they had some issues in the last year or two. How is that factored into the game design at all?
So that was the basic idea that we had from the beginning. It has to be modern, but it also has to make sense. We have at Flowers Games an historic of taking in consideration every community and this bias trope. That's why we're always working with different person coming from different perspective and different culture. And we every time we double check everything that we're doing to make sure that we don't have any kind of a dead angle based on our origins. So, for example, that's exactly why 2-3 of our writers are actually female. That's why, for example, when we've been working on our previous games at Flyers Games on Until Daylight, there is 6 characters. There are 3 males, 3 females. That's really important, especially in the stereotypes. For example, in Until the Light, the main tank is a female. And it's not only a female just to be a female. It's just that she comes from Hawaii and she's strong. You do not want to mess with her. And that's exactly what we wanted to do also with VTM chapters. Every single characters that we have, they are not just Brugia. They're not only Gangrel. They are, kindred. They're people. They are people with story flaws. And we wanted to make sure that every single thing that we did has to be genuinely interesting and realistic. So, yes, we do have a lot of check on multiple layers, and we have a lot of collaborators to actually make sure that we don't get insensitive, even if it was not meant to be.
That's awesome. All right. That's pretty much all of the questions we had. I have one. It's kind of silly, though. I'm not sure if you want. Are you up for a silly question?
Of course.
Okay. It's a general question. Bob, you feel free to answer, too. But, you know, I like to take them all seriously because you never know where someone's coming from. So the question is, if you turned a baby into a vampire, would it be an eternal baby with a thirst for blood, or would it eventually just age into a very smart and capable baby? Like, what if a 500-year-old baby became a prince of Bozeman, Montana? This is the question, gentlemen.
All right, I can actually answer this, but I'm going to allow Thomas first crack.
Yeah, I think it's going to be stuck in based on the you know, the base stats of one intelligence or even 0.5. I do not think it's going to have enough grasp of the environment to actually get enough XP to actually improve his character shit. So I think he's going to be stuck as a kindred baby for all this time. And at some point, someone is going to put him out of his misery, use him as a blood can, or maybe just have a little snack at some point.
I agree with that. I would add to the, because that answers the mechanic half of it. The other half of it is imagine what a baby is. You're new to the world. Everything's new to the senses. You don't know what your feet do. You don't even know what feet are. You know, you're able to get input from all these places. Now I'm going to trap you eternally in that state where the only thing you do know is hunger. You knew that before you were made a vampire. Now that you're a vampire and you got this beast, what do you think it's going to do? That child doesn't have a humanity or morals or any structure to tell it that frenzying is wrong. It's just going to frenzy. And a 500-year frenzy, that's just sadistic.
Yeah, I the reason why I asked this is because it is vaguely relevant to Montreal.
Of course. Boy. Right. You know that we're actually using it.
What?
Really?
Yes, of course.
Ah, it's so good. It's so good.
Tell us more. Tell us more.
Of course we are. No, it's too funny to be... to be on the side. It's not going to take a big place, but yes, it will be. That's one of the things that is going to be hidden at some point. And if you're lucky enough, good enough, and that you're looking for a few stuff, you will be able to find it. Yes.
Do you see what he did there? He said toy's not going to take a big place because it's small, because the toy is little bit. So good.
I got it. here's another question I have that maybe you can answer, or maybe we should wait and find out in the game. But for those that are familiar with Montreal by night, they know that there's a particular entity that resides in the hillside of a mountain. And often individuals were buried there and lost for all time. Is that something that's going to be a factor in the game at all? Is that something that's going to be addressed, or should we wait and play the game?
So I can explain you right off that, especially with V5, everything's been tuned down. Back to the roots of VTM, that is the beast, the monster that you are, and the slow degenerescence based on the humanity that you will immediately and 100% lose step by step, years by years. And that's the main approach of VTM. And over the time, it went to V3, revised, V20, and at the end of the power were so godlike and semi-god that it was losing its pure and first, you know, foundation. And V5 just cleared everything up. That's one of the first thing I really loved when I first read V5 at Gen Con in 2018, that your vampire is so weaker compared to the V3. You're back to the basics. And we had to respect that as well for VTM chapters, because especially when you're new to VTM, I do not think that you want to hear about metachecks. I do not think that you want to hear about the different layers and other universe connected to it. That will come maybe at some point in V5, maybe in number 4 of chapters. But for the first one, we want it to be as smooth as possible and not refer to it directly. Doesn't mean that there is not a lot of thing going on close to the sewers, inside the mountain, that there is no influence here and there based on the years of the Sabbath and everything that could have stayed alive and imprisoned in Montreal.
You know, I got to point out, because this is kind of what I do. They have a lore sheet called the Shalalim, or the Shalim, in V5 that more than hints to demonic influence still being there. But I applaud that Chapters isn't using it. And here's why. If you're not going to, you mentioned scale. If you're not going to take the scale beyond the fives that it's limited to, and you're not going to pay attention to the elder portion of the game, to then suddenly bring in demons, you're playing a different game.
Yeah, right, exactly. And I think both of us, we respect that old material, but we are also aware that maybe some of it doesn't need to be included in an everyday application of the game.
Yeah, it lacks, when you go for demon, any kind of kindred that has survived for 400 or 500 years, seems like a yodeling baby asking for a snack, because there is no way a demon's going to be more evil than this kindred. It's pure black. There's nothing you can do with it. And kindred society is a full nuance of gray, of dark stuff, but maybe sometimes it's for the greater good. And that's the whole morality systems that is very important in VTM. And I think that pushing this in the first opus of Chapters would completely annihilate the scale of the game and the story. So, no, that's why.
That's very smart.
Yeah,
that makes a lot of sense. So, I like I said, I think that's one of the things that we look at a lot of those. You know, we have had the opportunity to go back and read every one of these old city books and source books and, you know, kind of go, maybe not so much that part, you know, seemed to be a lot of focus on demons back in the day, but I don't know that that's really necessary for the feel of Vampire the Masquerade to be entertaining.
Well, it doesn't mean that we're not going to use every, some part of, you know, lore in Montreal by Night. There is some amazing characters that, especially since it was one of the first one that was really dark and mature, it was amazing. Like Ezekiel is an amazing character. There is so much color that makes no sense, and that they are so devious that, yes, you need to acknowledge this, that that work was tremendous and amazing. So it might be just, in a dialogue here. It might be just in an investigation there. But you will see a lot of Easter egg and reference to this. It's in the same city. They've been dead for 15 years. So, you know, the ashes are still a little bit warm.
I'm very much looking forward to it. I have one last question for you. And this is just a question for you as a developer. You know, we get on podcasts, we talk about all the great stuff and all the awesome things that are coming out, and, you know, all the cool things that we've thought up in the development. What has been the most difficult or the most trying part about the process of developing this game? Like, what's the one thing that, you know, has you, you know, pulling your proverbial hair out?
I'd say that's the energy, because there is so much fun that we're doing. We're having so much fun doing that project, and it takes so much more than two person. There is 15 person working on that. So the coordination between, you know, the miniature sculpting, designing, painting, shipping, the event at Gen Con, Essen, the cross promotion with 15 different organization, the writing, the testing, it's one specific thing is not hard. It's being 100% focused on every single aspect of it and being two showrunners, Gary, my co-founder, and I. This is something that is draining. But, you know, sometimes, most of the days in the last 6 months, we've been working 16 hours a day. or at least 12 most of the days, so 7 days a week. And we're not doing this only because it's our main business and now we can focus on this and we believe so much in that project that we're going all in. What I'm saying is it's so good to be working on a project with such passion, such magnitude, such history for us. It's not hard. It's just that everything is important, everything is detrimental, and everything needs to be perfect. And being focused 100% of the time on this, yes, it could be hard. One is the main reaction that, and one of the main way we're coping with this is the support from the community. When we're receiving an email from, you know, podcast for or from Facebook or from any other forum we're in, and they say, "I'm really excited to have this game. Keep going, guys." This is the best thing you can have. This is like pure bliss, pure energy just injected into your soul so you can give a little bit more that day. So we're covered. We have an amazing community behind us. And if it's the momentum to say thank you to all of us, you included, well, let's be it. Thank you so much for your support because it makes the whole difference in the world.
Well, I could tell you this much. We're more than fans.
Yeah.
We love it. We oh, it's kindred spirits, right? You know, Thomas, everything you've said, it's a lot what we have even said in pods especially, just how much the gaming community has affected us from teens and on. And I think that's an important piece where people have to kind of groove with that and understand that that's why we want to keep the lifeblood in the community.
Yeah.
And when it comes to draining, we get that too. Long hours to get it done and a passion. It's awesome that you have it and it keeps you going, but I agree. A sentence is like a lifeblood that you, you know, from that you get externally from someone out of nowhere who's just like, we are backing what you do. Please keep it up. It helps us in whatever we do. And we've had that feedback. And let me tell you, you're going to get it from us. I mean, just,
yeah.
I mean, if that, I don't know if that helps, I mean, definitely us too.
The truth of the matter is, you know, like we love this community as much as anybody does, right? You know, we give a ton to it as well, but like the reason why we would have you on a second time, the reason why we would talk about this is because, you know, like Bob said, we see that kindred spirit. We see that, you know, the passion to take, you know, what you love and make it into something new. And also we see what a great job you're doing. And, you know, it's not even a second guess to be like, yeah, we want to support this because we can see the value in it. We can see how much work and how much passion it resides in it. So, you know, we're looking forward to it. However, I got to ask you, you know, are you going to be at Gen Con in August?
Of course we will.
So,
of course we will. That's the thing we discovered, Gary and I, this year. We were there for the first time together, and I'm the operational director of Flyos Games, and he's the creative director. So we design everything together in terms of gameplay, of user experience, but in terms of visual, in terms of graphism, is the man in charge. And we have our very specific, you know, task, so we don't, you know, work on toes of the other. And we've been best friends for the last 20 years. I'm the, you know, stepfather of his daughter. So we have to work in together. And that's 99.9% of the time, pure bliss and fun. And we were there at Gen Con discovering how much, you know, putting this project out there was an amazing experience. How the community is very, very strong in the US. And at the SN, it was completely different. It was not good, not better, not worse. It was different. And the level of love that we received in at Gen Con was amazing. And we have a lot of other surprise that we are brewing on our side. So stay focused, get into our Facebook Flyos Games page, because this is where we give the good announcement. And yes, we are preparing a Gen Con very special event.
Well, I don't want to lead you down any path you can't escape from, but somebody in this podcast lives in Indianapolis and has a podcast studio. So maybe we could figure out a way to get you on live, because I would love to sit down with you and just chat with you live. Because truth be told, I love these interviews, but it's hard to see, you know, conversation when you're not in front of the person. So I would like to extend you the invitation when you're in Gen Con, if we can make it happen. I'd love to have you, you know, sit down with me face to face and have a chat.
That's a hard yes.
Cool. Okay, good. Good. Well, I guess having said that, is there anything else that you want to share with us that we didn't get out before we wrap up?
No, I think I've covered it all. Of course, I've missed a few, you know, catchphrases and here and there to describe chapters. So if you're keen to hear more details, go to Kickstarter page, put chapters, and you will find it. For the rest, you know how much I love being on your podcast, and I love your energy. That's exactly why I'm listening to it religiously. So I'd actually say to you, thank you for what you're doing, because it makes a big difference in my week. It makes a big difference in the way I'm playing games in general. And you're doing an amazing job. So keep going, guys.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. We don't have a choice. We're chained to it.
Yeah, right. We started this train. At the we can't stop it.
No, you can't. It has to work. So if you're still listening to that podcast, actually, and you're, you know, cruising on the high we're the three of us having, make sure to click on the description link that we provided to 25 years, because the more you do, the more you support them. And that's very important for you to click on this. So every time you do, we are giving a little bit back to 25. So that's something very transparent, something very upfront here. We want to support the people of our community, and we want to give the lifeblood and the stream quality that we can. So that's one way of helping 25 years. So make sure to help them.
Thank you very much. And I will have some more details about that in just a second. But until then, my name is Nathan.
And I'm Bob.
Okay, folks, so head on over right now to UtilityMuffinLabs.com, our Discord, our Twitter, or our Facebook page, to use that link to back Vampire the Masquerade chapters. If you use that link, it'll help our show. We really appreciate you doing it. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you next time. Thank you for listening to 25 Years of Vampire the Masquerade. If you like our podcast and you'd like to help support our show, consider backing us at patreon.com/25 Years of Vampire the Masquerade. We offer reward tiers of additional Patreon-only podcasts, t-shirts, and personalized gaming experiences. Follow us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, and go to our website, utilitymuffinlabs.com, for links to all of our social media, additional podcasts, and more. If you'd like to chat with us, submit a title for review, promote your gaming-related stuff, or anything else you can think of, email me at nathan@utilitymuffinlabs.com. Utility Muffin Labs, consistently rated adequate.